So some perspectives on the Haggadah to share with the family. I have stuck rigidly to two criteria, given the title. Number one, that we are focusing on the primary Cypriot Sifrim, basically ideas that reflect and amplify Cypriot Sifrim, as opposed to some of the other themes that are in the Haggadah. So we've avoided or sidestepped the Lomdus on things like Karban Pesach, but also I focused on ideas that are fairly short and that can be thrown into the Seder. I think these days, Baruch Hashem, the children come home with such wants of ideas, you sometimes wonder whether the balance of the Gadol of Vincha has gone a bit alright. So these are ideas that can be shared with the whole family more of the Chalabrius, and hopefully ideas that are not as well known. So to start off with Yachatz. Yachatz, I saw in a Gadol that my father has at home, that in terms of Yachatz, we find in Parshas for Yishlach, but Yachatz is the Omer Sherito. That Yaakov Avinu, in his confrontation with Esau, split his camp into two. And the Torah says, "Hamachna anishan is later, but the machna, the camp that is behind, will escape." So he's facing this confrontation with Esau, and even if the external camp will be threatened, and even if the external camp could be annihilated, the internal camp of Yaakov will remain, will be able to escape. Says Rashi, "Machna anishan is later bal kalcha." It's definitely, there's no question about it, that the internal camp will escape. So this, I got a quote from the Zohar, that this is a paradigm. Not just for the mini Am Yisrael that stood there in front of Esau, but also for every member of Klal Yisrael. That every member of Klal Yisrael has two camps. You have the internal and the external. You have the Guf and you have the Neshama. And over the millennia, even though Esau has attacked the Guf, has attacked the external camp, and Machna Nishmef later, the internal camp, is destined to escape. The Kodesh Baruch Hu has ensured that the internal Klal Yisrael is invincible, is indestructible, and therefore is guaranteed to escape. And Yachatz, the Seder Night, represents that. You take the matzah and you hide it away. That represents the internal camp that has remained untouchable, that has remained out of reach, which is part and parcel of the story of Godus and Gula, that even though we face the enemy, that the Yachatz, the part of us which is indestructible, has always been placed out of reach. It's interesting that towards the end of the Seder you bring that out. Almost as though the Seder itself has the koyach to bring out the internal. One idea. When it comes to Avon Mayinu, so I saw in the Haggadah of Rav Tzvi HaSherber, the Kerem HaTzvi, it was in the Haggadah of Rav Moshe Sternbach. Two interesting ideas. One is, you know, the Manish Tana is always going to be, we're always going to have Shaila and Tshuva. You can have two Talmud Chacham and Gedolei Hadar sitting together at Seder night, and they're still going to, one's going to ask, one's going to respond. So why is it that it has to have this format? So he suggests that basically the essence of Seder Night is to reinforce the basics of Emunah. That's what it is, to emerge with a reinforced Emunah Peshuta, the basics of Emunah. And the whole format of question and answer, which is essentially a simple method of education, of reinforcement. It is a methodology guaranteed to allow us to review and to reinvigorate the basics of Emunah. It brings a very interesting story over there, an episode that happened once with the Chofetz Chaim. So the Chofetz Chaim, it seems after a particularly difficult period of Klal Yisrael in terms of pogroms, so he was unwell and he was being treated by a doctor. The doctor was Jewish, but the doctor was not solid in his emunah. And the doctor was questioning the Chofetz Chaim, how can it be? How can Kadosh Baruch Hu allow such things to happen? How are we supposed to understand? Until basically the question came in, how can we believe there is Hashem mentioning such things happen? So Chofetz Chaim says to him, listen, you're asking me, how do I know there's a God? I'm asking you, how do I know you're a doctor? So he said to him, look, you can see I've got my tuzah, I've got my certification on the wall, and that shows that I qualified as a doctor. So the Chofetz Chaim says, yeah, but that was 40 years ago. How do I know you're still a doctor? He says, listen, once you've got the accreditation, once you've established your credentials, then they're there for all time. So the Chofetz Chaim reminds you there's not a need to establish his credentials for every single person, for every single individual. That Yetzias Mitzrayim, when it came out of Mitzrayim, so Kodesh Baruch Hu established his credentials, Kodesh Baruch Hu established the unique relationship between us and himself, and that's there for all time. And this is the essence of Avodah Mayinu Fam Mitzrayim Yetzino Hashem Lekenu, that this is essence of Seder Night, is that we remind ourselves, we reinforce the fact that Hashem has established his credentials are there for all time, even through the difficult times, nonetheless the Kesher is permanent. Interestingly enough, when it comes to the Rosha, the Kasha of the Rosha, so from the Kerem HaTzvi, it brings also an interesting analogy. The Rosha's Kasha is, we take the Rosha, that had he been there, 1 second, had he been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. So it brings a story there of two students, and one Jewish and one not Jewish, and it came to near Seder night, and everybody knows that students like a good meal, especially a good free meal, And one student said to the other, Jewish student said to his non-Jewish friend, look, you know, it comes to Seder night, the Jews celebrate a festival, I guarantee you a good meal, you come with me to shul, and we'll sit in shul together, inevitably somebody will invite us back, and anyway. So he thought, no, good idea, why not, worth a try. So the two students go to shul, they sit at the back there, sure enough, someone comes over to them, and says, you've got somewhere to eat? No, we haven't, please come with us. The problem was, and they were split up from each other. And they couldn't, the host couldn't take both of them, so he found another host for the non-Jewish student, not knowing he wasn't Jewish. So it comes, the non-Jewish student comes into the house, and Taka seems very nice, it's all laid out for Leil Seder with a Yom Tov table, and it looks as though there's a promising meal ahead. Starts off pretty encouragingly, there's a nice glass of wine, drinks it back, and there he waits. And then the next thing comes along, with a little bit of carapace, a little bit of, maybe it's an aperitif. And then they start talking, and talking, and talking, and talking, and talking. Somebody doesn't understand, somebody doesn't understand, goes on for hours and hours. And then his patience is being stretched. Then he thinks, get up, we're going to wash our hands. Oh, now it looks like the meal. Okay, starts off the meal, and a bit of matzah, cracker of some sort. And then they give him, comes tomorrow, and then pour plenty of fresh horseradish, and put it in, and the guy thinks, oh, this must be the beginning of the meal. And he takes a bite, and his mouth is burning, his head is bursting, and he gets up and runs out of the house, says, wait till I get my hands on my friend. Next morning he sees his friend, he says to him, no, how was it, had a good time? He said, I had a good time, it was sugar, and then he killed me. He doesn't have to wait hours and hours and hours, and then he killed me. His friend said to him, he says, you knew fool, he said, had you waited another 5 minutes, you would have got the meal. Had you waited another 5 minutes, you would have got the meal. And that is the story of a Tzitz Mitzrayim. You know how somebody on the God, that part of, he says, what's all this bother for? What's all the effort for? What's all the point of the whole business? Is it really worth it? This was life all about. I want it now, I want it instantly, I want the joy now. He would have been one of those that would have lost faith and wouldn't have seen it through to the meal, wouldn't have seen it through to the Ullah. And therefore, that's the mashal, that you have to see it through, you have to hold on there. And nothing in life comes without effort, and that's the purpose of the effort. The purpose of the effort is to come to the moment of redemption. He wouldn't have seen it through. He would have given up at the point of morrow. On the paragraph, Baruch Shem has to chosel yourself. So many of the Farshim discuss the calculation. So over here, Nagana tells us, quotes from Parshas Lech Lecha, that the Inuul owes some Arba Me'ah Shana. The Klal Yisrael were destined to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. Of course, as we know, they weren't there for 400 years, they were there for 210 years. So many Mepharshim discuss, how do you reconcile this promise with what actually happened in the Maaseh? So he suggests very beautifully as follows, that when the Kodesh Baruch Hu promised Avram Avinu that Klal Yisrael would go into Mitzrayim. And Klal Yisrael would go into Mitzrayim. That imagine the moment a Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Avram Avinu, "Bris Ben Abasorim, your children will be destined for Golus for 400 years." So we know that when a person is anticipating good news, part of the joy is that anticipation. So even before, prior to the arrival of the actual good news, the anticipation forms part of the joy. Similarly, Rahman al-Islam, a person is anticipating sorrow. A person is waiting for a difficult operation. Or Rahman al-Islam, a person is waiting to be sentenced. So part of the anguish, part of the tzav, is that anticipation. Why so? Because you live it through. It becomes real in your mind. You imagine it. You work through the moments. So that's why the Haggadah says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu, "Kama she'omar la'Avraham Avinu bebris ben Abasorim." That from the moment the Kodesh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, from that moment of Brisbane of time, he predicted and promised that the future would be temporarily bleak. From that moment, that was the beginning of the Golus in Avraham Avinu's mind, because he began to think it through, what his children would go through, and how they would survive, and how they would come through all the pain. That's why Avraham particularly gives us the date of this particular promise. We don't really need to, I mean, we know when the promise was. Avraham stresses, no, from Moshe Omar, and the Kodesh Baruch was said, Avraham Avinu was sorry. From that moment it was said, for Avraham Avinu it became a reality. Interestingly enough, of course, at the end of Parashas Bo, when they were describing the Yetzias Mitzrayim, so we say they were actually there for 430 years. And of course, but the Maaseh Bris Ben Abasorim was 30 years prior to the Leidas Yitzchak. Prior to the Leidas Yitzchak was Bris Ben Abasorim was 30 years. So therefore, the reality of this was a reality from the moment of Bris Ben Abasorim, 430 years in total, and 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, where Avraham Avinu had a child to focus on and had a child to live the moments through in his own mind. Also, again, Nehemiah 3 says, "Vayemel Avram Yadoya Teda Pigei Yadarcha." So what is the double lashon Yadoya Teda? So Interesting. We know that Avraham Avinu questioned the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hama Eidah Ki Rashanu. So it's very difficult to understand that the Rosh HaMa'aminim, Avraham Avinu, who was the paragon of faith, questioned the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Rosh Hashanah brings that it doesn't mean that that Avraham Avinu had any doubts that this would happen. When he was asking for what, he said, look, I'm already the Zaken. I won't see this through. I want to be able to see what happens to my children. And his question was more, will I be able to see in actuality? After Achamisa, will I be aware? Will I be able to live it through with them, Achamisa? That was his question. I want to see it for myself. They're my children. I want to experience. I want to see what they're going through. So his question was, can the Mason know? Can those who passed on to another world see? Can they know? Are they aware that what happens? And that's Yadur HaTeda. It's a double Russian. You will know of the Gonus, and you will know of the Geula. And how do we know that is the case? So in Parshas Chukos, so Rashi brings, on the Pasuk, in Parshas Chukos, Chof Tetzvav, Vayodah Vatenu Mitzrayimah, Vaneisha V'Mitzrayim Yomim Rabim, Vayera'u Lanu Mitzrayim V'La'avoseinu. So the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, did bad to us, V'La'avoseinu. What does that mean, says Rashi? Avoseinu were not in Mitzrayim. So Rashi brings, V'La'avoseinu, Mikan Sha'avos Mitzrayim Bekever Kushuparonis Bo'ad Yisrael. From here we see that the Avos feel the Tzaren Bekever when punishment comes and punishes. So that was the answer. You will know. You will know. That was the Kadosh Baruch Hu's question. That was Avram's question. That was his answer. You will know of their gods. But you also know of their Geula. And in Tehillim Ayin Ches, so they say, Neged Avosam Osa Fela. In front of the Avos, the Kadosh Baruch Hu did wonders, but Eretz Mitzrayim, so they turn. Says Rashi, Neged Avosam. So Rashi brings, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Bo'o al Hayom, Zeherem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ha'eichu Goelet Bnei. From a Medrash, that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov came to the Yam, and they saw, they were allowed to see the Geula of Klal Yisrael as well. So that's the Pshat in the Yodeh Teda, that you will know. That was a question of Avraham Avinu. Will I be able to see it myself? Will I be able to see with my own eyes the realization of it? Not that I have any doubts it will happen. Will I be able to see it? Shalish, you will. That the others in the Kever on the Tsar of Klal Yisrael, and that the others themselves were there. They were brought back. They were brought to see the Geula of Klal Yisrael as well. Now, in terms of, I once heard actually just an irresistible idea from, a paragraph before, from the Blipper, Yochum Arish Chodesh, from the Blipper of Manchester, Yochum Arish Chodesh. He said in his own inimitable style, so what's the Habermilah from Arish Chodesh? He said, you know, from Arish Chodesh, the children in school start learning about Pesach. So I might have thought that the children can learn about Yetzias Mitzrayim, that the children can understand the whole thing outside of the home. It can only be in the home. The communication to the next door can only take place in the home. It can't take place anywhere else. And that is the essence of it all. The Maharal, on jumping forward a bit actually, before the Maharal, on the Makkos. So I always feel that with the Makkos themselves, just in terms of bringing out Pashat, we see the miracles in their magnitude. Of course, that we know the Tachadash Ba'achav are not random groupings. I think it's of what was well known, but in case it isn't, I just think it bears repeating. In some sense, the Makkos were a military campaign. They were a military campaign, and the various groupings represent the stages of this military campaign. The Tzach is all below ground. The Tzach dumped their kin. These all happened basically at ground or below ground level. Adash will happen basically from above ground level. And Ba'achov happens from the air. This was literally a military campaign. I once heard from Rabbi Roshansky in school days, Hashem Ish Milchoma. Ish is Eretz Yom Shamayim. Eretz Yom Shamayim. Hashem Ish Milchoma. The campaign was fought at three different levels. Eretz from the ground, Yom sea level, and Shamayim. Of course, philosophically, no question about it, as Ramban and others illustrate, this is much more than a military campaign. This was HaKadosh Baruch Hu demolishing the might of Mitzrayim and demolishing the Emunah of Mitzrayim. It was a systematic campaign to demonstrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ki Niha Oretz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is totally in charge. And I would just like to bring out, just from the Pasuk, Chatan of Pesukim, how this happens without any interpretation, just having the Poshuk Pshat speaks volumes. Of course, the first of the two Makos were replicated by Mitzrayim, by an Egyptian magician, is the first of the two Makos. But then things, and that gave them a false sense of security. We can do this. This isn't any great shakes. We can do this as well. This is quite straightforward stuff. Then comes the Makos of Kinim. And they are forced to recognize for the first time. This is the first acknowledgement on their part that there is a power here beyond them. A power here beyond them. And the Ramban says, of course, they couldn't do kinim because either they couldn't work in micro, they could only work in macro, or because they couldn't produce yesh me'ayin. They couldn't produce yesh me'ayin, ex nihilo. Then we have the Makkah of Dever. Makkah of Dever is the next stage where we see that things are changing in Mitzrayim. Because the Makkah of Dever is the first time in Tess Zion by Yishlach Paro b'nei lo meis mimik neishol anechot. So here is the first time we see that Paro himself decides he has to check this out. Just check this out. Prior to that, we don't see that. Of course, Dever, which is animal disease, which you can imagine is highly infectious, and the animals share troughs and this and the other, and he thinks it's inconceivable that this hasn't affected the behemoths of Klal Yisrael. So he for the first time sends spies and asks them on our mission to ascertain is it true. Here we see a certain uncertainty on his part. And then the Makkah of Shechem we find a second that this is the first time that the here we are the prophet test your dollar when a yachlu hachartumim la'amoyd lifnei Moshe from Nashkin. Prior to that, even if they couldn't replicate the plagues, they stood by Pharaoh. When Moshe and Aaron came in, they stood by Pharaoh. They were, after all, his closest probably advisors, his magicians, but here they couldn't even appear. They didn't even turn up. So you see the systematic dismantling of the emunah, the power base, the emotional base of Mitzrayim. And then we have the Makkah of Borod. In terms of Borod, it's very interesting. So Moshe Rabbeinu makes a pronouncement, Hayare Tzava Hashem Yavdei Paro in Pasuk Tres Chof, Heinis Es Avoda Ves Mekneu El Abatim. If you fear the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then take your cattle in. Don't leave them out at night. Are we punishing them or not punishing them? If you're punishing them, don't give them any warnings. What type of military campaign is it? That before you bomb them, if you put them in, you'll be okay. What type of military campaign? So to my mind, Pashup Shah is that now every one of the Mitzrayim had to make a decision. Hayoyes to Hashem? Do you subscribe? Do you not subscribe? Do you believe? You could no longer sit on the fence. Till now, maybe you could sit on the fence. You could contribute to the magical powers, meteorological happenings. Now you couldn't anymore. You yourself had to make a personal decision. You believe, you do not believe. You subscribe, you do not believe. It forced every one of the Mitzrayim to actually decide, are you on one side or the other? And then, in terms of Arba, in Shmos Yud Zion, they themselves come to Pharaoh and says, do you not realize that Terem Teda Tlachim Mitzrayim? But just in terms of bringing out Poshup Shat from Pesukim, you see the dismantling of the Emunah of Mitzrayim. In terms of Dayenu, so there is a very beautiful Maharal on Dayenu. Maral says that we find many times within Yiddishkeit that 15 represents an ascent. 15 represents a pinnacle and represents an ascent. So the Moshe will find that Pesach and Sukkot are the 15th of the month. I like this particularly because it is a very good way of engaging those around the table in terms of numbers 15. Where do we find 15 as significant? 15 represents ascent. We find, of course, the Shem Malik, the 15 steps from one part of the Beit HaMikdash, from Ezras Moshim, to the next part of the Beit HaMikdash. We also find Kibitah Hashem Tzurolom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created worlds. Maral elsewhere says that the words with the name Hashem, Yud-Kei. Maral elsewhere says that Yud is the smallest letter of the Aleph Beis and represents worlds without dimensions. Worlds without dimensions. And Hey is a world of dimensions. Combination of both letters. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created worlds. Not just one world, but both worlds. And of course, in terms of on Seder night as well, we find there are 15 stages in the Seder. It depends if you count Motzi Matzah as one or two. If it's one, then it's only 14, then it's Kibiyot Hashem. So it's your dad is 14, so you win either way. But if it's two, 15, you have 15 stages in the Seder. In Dayenu there are actually 15 things for which we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Morale actually analyzes that these 15 work in three stages. Work in three stages. Until the point of Nosnanos Mamainon, the first five are about simply drawing Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, restoring them from a point of degradation, from a point of slavery, to a point where they can at least stand on the Kiyum. The next five, until Echlonos Amon, are about elevating Klal Yisrael, beginning to elevate Klal Yisrael, enveloping them within an environment of Ruchnius, an environment of connection with Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the last five are about bringing them to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Vekus of Kodesh Baruch Hu, climaxing in Bolan Lonos Beis HaBachira. So the whole of the Beinu works in this ascent, this process of ascent, up to the peak, and 15 represents the peak. An idea that I heard actually from a nephew of mine, and I said tonight, it's a beautiful idea, Pesach Matzimorah from Minyamin Green, I'm not sure who he said it, in his name he said it, but very interesting, when you get to Pesach Matzimorah, Pashtus, the order, should be done around. Because the Maisa here, we're at the point towards the Gula stage of the Seder. And Morah should come first, not last. So he said a very beautiful idea, which I think is very, very telling. So some things in our lives, which even though we chronologically leave behind, we don't leave them behind us. In life, people go through ups and downs and different stages, and sometimes you emerge from a difficult stage, a difficult tikkufa in life. And even though you emerge from that difficult tikkufa, it forms part of who we are, and should form part of who we are. Not only because it helps fashion who we are, but because if we can retain that, then we retain some sensitivity towards others. So Pesach Matzah Morah, the Morah isn't, although we've moved away from the stage of Morah, but the Morah still fashions, still forms part of the people that we are. And that's important, because that allows us to empathize and to sympathize with others. Behold our Radar, Chayv Adam Liros, is out from the Kinu Yachim Mitzrayim. So I want to share with you, I think, a story which is appropriate for all ages, which I heard for the first time last week. I don't know if I would say it necessarily on Leil Seder, but certainly during Pesach, and maybe during the meal, it's a beautiful idea to share. And certainly if it's not during Leil Seder, then actually if one would use a bit of, what's the word? What's that word? Props. It's a story with a very powerful idea. As follows. Basically two children who visit their grandparents, regularly. I won't dramatize the whole story, you can do it yourselves. But, and you can describe how they go when they visit their grandparents, what grandparents do, how grandparents support us, etc., etc. And this particular grandfather, he has on his table a box. And the children often ask him what's inside the box. It's a very beautifully polished box, it always takes center stage on the table. He says to them, inside this box is the future, is the secret of the future of our family. Inside this box is the future, secret of the future of our family. And they quiz him and they press him, no, when I think you're ready, then I'll show you what's inside the box. And if you want, if you think you know what's inside the box, put a little piece of paper in an envelope, give it to me, and if you're right, I'll open the box. And each child has a turn, over a period of months, over a period of years, no. One day the grandfather thinks, you know what, now it's time to open the box. And he brings them in, there's a light shining on the box, and there's nice food around the table. And he brings them there, you know, one of the youngest kids is a little bit scared, what's going to be inside the box. He opens the box. Good. What's inside the box? Good to ask what's inside the box. Inside the box is a mirror. Is a mirror. Because his grandchildren represent the future of the family. That they themselves represent the future of the family. And the children are old enough to understand that they themselves represent the future of the family, then that's the most important message to communicate to them. Behold our Vodar, high bottom nurses Atma, the person is obligated to see himself, as representing as coming out of his time, but more than that, to see himself as representing the future of punishment and the future of the family. Okay. Now, towards the end of the Seder, in terms of Echa Miyadea, so I had a beautiful idea from my friend and colleague, my David Tugendhaft, that it's interesting, what's the purpose of Echa Miyadea? It's very nice, what's the purpose of it? And that the whole process of Leil Seder is supposed to be a process which realigns us, which reconnects our perspectives, so that we emerge from Seder with an intuitive sense of our connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, an instinctive sense of the connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So very often, when in terms of these ideas of association, if I said you black, or a colour or white, what's the first thing you associate? Really, our thinking should be such that whatever we see in lives, our initial association should be something ruchnius, We ought to be able to see life through ruchnius. And this is the purpose of Echa Miyadea. As you come through the end of the Seder, if I said you one, the first thing you should say is Kodesh Baruch Hu, 32, Shemesh Chosabris, 3, etc. So Echa Miyadea becomes not a test, but an indication that we have emerged through Seder with our perspective totally reconnected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that our instinctive reaction to everything we hear and everything we see is the Ruchnius connection to it. I heard a very beautiful story reading from Rabbi Kupitz in Manchester, told in only the way that he can tell it, but I'll share it with you as best I can. That's on Chag Gadya. The story is told, I think it's actually a true story, but I can't remember about who it was said, of a Rav in Eastern Europe who had a very demanding regime. And in the evenings he used to come home from learning, he used to have supper, go out, and he was available to the kehillah for questions and answers. And this was the regime that he had. And his wife was always particular that he came home, he had supper, and it was all ready for him. He could go out and face the questions in the evening. One afternoon she's making fish for supper. And the fish is a bit too hot, so she takes, I'll just put it outside for a few minutes to cool down, so it'll be ready for her husband when he comes home. And that's what she does. Comes back home and says, oh, God, the fish is gone. The local cats are still on the fish. The cat's still on the fish. She said, oh, my husband's going to be upset, and what I'm going to do, we'll have supper, we'll have some function during the evening. And there's a whole commotion. And in those days, I suppose, the doors of the house were more open than they are today. And the local chevroman is passing by, I'm calling the young fella, and he sees the commotion in the Robertson's house, and he says, what's going on? What's the matter? She says, I don't know what's happened about the fish and the cat. My husband's going to be upset with me. She says, don't worry, I'll speak to your husband before he comes home. She says, don't worry, leave it to me. So he goes to the shul for Mariv. And after Mariv, he comes home and says, Rav, I must ask you a question. I must ask you a question. She says, hey, what do you mean? You know my routine. Go home first, have supper, you can ask questions whenever you like. She says, no, I've got to ask a question now. It's a question of the moon. It's a question of the moon, I've got to ask a question now. A question of the moon, I can't, even half an hour, a question of the moon, I can't let you go back. She says, what's it worth? She says, let's have a look at Chag Gadya, says the Yankee. He says, I don't understand. She says, the Gedi did nothing wrong. The Gedi was innocent, which means that the cat was guilty, which means the dog was innocent, which means the stick was guilty, which means that the fire was innocent, which means the water was guilty, which means the ox was innocent, which means the shochet was guilty, which means Malach HaMomus was innocent, which means Rachmon Nisnan, the Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's a question of money. I don't understand. The process of Chatatia seems to imply the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Actually, you've got it all wrong. Got it all wrong. Completely wrong. You've got to start from the right perspective. The right perspective is, without question about it, whatever Kodesh Baruch Hu does is Lepoiv. No question about it. So Kodesh Baruch Hu did the right thing, obviously. The Malach HaMomus was guilty. The Shochet was innocent. The ox was guilty. The Maya was innocent. The Nura was guilty. The Chutra was innocent. The dog was guilty. The cat was innocent. He stops and says, oh, you're obviously, if the cat was innocent, you've got no supper. But the Meister, although it's an amusing story, I think the essence of the story is magnificent. One has to start with the right perspective. You've got to start with the right perspective, with the right axioms. If you start with the wrong axioms, then the conclusions can be gefährlich. But you have to start with the right axioms. And that is the whole essence of Leil Seder, to be able to reinforce our axioms, to be able to emerge with the strength of knowledge and the absolute complete conviction and passion that we have the right axioms in our lives. And I can't resist just sharing with you as a final thought an extract from Rav Hirsch on the 19 letters, but in the 19 letters, so he has a paragraph or two about what was the purpose of the Tzitzis Rhyme. Why did Tzitzis have to go through the Tzitzis Rhyme in the first place? What was the whole purpose of it all? And he says that basically HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to emblazon of the Neshamos of Tzitzis Rhyme that life has value if life is connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Without connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, life has no value whatsoever. And it's very interesting, it's very intriguing in terms of what I'm involved in. It's very strange how Seder Night brings people back. Very, very strange. You know, all the Yom Tov that brings people back, people are mumish, disconnected, but somehow come back for Seder Night. So our host says as follows, that Mitzrayim was the apex of civilization. It was the everything of its time. It was the climax of it all. If you wanted to achieve in life, you wanted to live in Mitzrayim, you wanted to be part of Mitzrayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes 30 short time to Mitzrayim. They settle there. They become civilized there. They become part and parcel of the civilization there. And then the civilization that they venerated turns against them. The neighbor became the tyrant. The business colleague became the oppressor. The civilization that they venerated turns against them. Until basically they have nothing. Everything they thought, promised value, and promised the future, completely disintegrated. And then to quote that Hirsch, and then at that moment where they have nothing, the majesty of the power of Mitzrayim sank before the power of the people before the majesty of the people that have none but God alone. So the power of Mitzrayim sank before the majesty of the people, the majesty of the people that have none but God alone. And remember, when they had absolutely nothing, at the darkest point of the Godless Kodesh Baruch Hu redeemed them, but he redeemed them with nothing, nothing but that connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that experience of thinking that this is utopia and discovering that that utopia becomes hell, not utopia, that experience was so seared into the soul of Klal Yisrael that that became there for all time, that everything has value with connection with Kodesh Baruch Hu, and nothing has value without it. And that's why it says Rav Hirsch elsewhere that they were not allowed to bake matzahs on the way out. Why were they not allowed to bake matzahs? A few more minutes to bake matzahs. And he actually calls, because the point of that is, they were supposed to emerge with total dependence on Kodesh Baruch Hu. Had they been allowed to start making their own bread, providing for their own provisions, then they would have emerged with some kind of sense of new independence. It wasn't right. The whole lesson in Mitzrayim was that they were dependent on Kodesh Baruch Hu, and life is dependent on that connection with Kodesh Baruch Hu. He actually calls matzah the bread of dependence, the bread of dependence. And that's what the matzah symbolizes. The knowledge and the principle, the axiom, that if we have connection with Kodesh Baruch Hu, we have everything. But without that, we have nothing.
Sure.